I was presenting this as evidence to the people in the motor vehicle crash.
I would have thought bullshit.
Exactly what the adjuster said. Bullshit, you make stuff up, your standard attorney.
Yes.
The phone here rings 168 times an hour. I have my own call center.
168 times an hour.
But of all of those people that call in, we probably take 1 to 3%.
Give me a few examples of questions you ask that uncover the real stuff from the "I want Ramos to get me a bunch of money."
I am on a mission to change that exact perception of personal injury attorneys.
Welcome to the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor. Today's episode will satisfy a forever curiosity of mine. If I'm the victim of an accident, who should I call? So, which TV commercial star, which billboard photo, bus placard, phone number, all that. Seriously, I've always wondered about the business side of personal injury law, so I'm really excited to learn about that today with my guest, Dr. Joseph Ramos. And having Joseph Ramos is kind of a bonus for me too, listeners, because if you've listened to my past episodes of ProCo 360, you know how I value, extremely value, a great niche, and medical doctor turned attorney is just that. So Dr. Joseph Ramos spent years treating trauma patients, then went to law school and built Ramos Law, which now runs offices across Colorado and one in Arizona. We're going to get into that doctor to attorney niche. We'll also dig into personal injury law, the billboards, TV spots, all that, huge marketing budgets, and serving clients. How does that all actually work? So Dr. Joseph Ramos, Joe, welcome to ProCo 360.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here, and it was exciting to learn about your business today before we got started.
Yeah, and listeners, we talked before we even started that I was going to ask you some probing questions about this whole notion of personal injury law, and you said go for it. So having said that, though, I am going to toss you a softball to begin with.
Okay, let's hear it. I like softball.
Which I hate to do. I hate to toss softballs at the beginning. But, okay, how did this all happen? You went from being a trauma surgeon to being a lawyer who has this law firm. How did that all happen?
Well, and it was actually, to make sure that it's the record straight here, emergency room, I'm a boarded emergency medicine physician.
Got it.
That's what got me out to Colorado. Was in those days, it was Denver General. It had recently turned Denver Health Medical Center. And down here, it was known as the Knife and Gun Club.
They'd I remember hearing that.
Yeah, remember that? They wrote
downtown
a book on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it turns out in trauma and emergency medicine, there are these treatises in different specialty fields where the where people have written the book, is what I mean by treatise. And attendings here, the two main leading books in training, trauma and emergency medicine, was written by two of the attendings at Denver Health Medical Center. Vince Markovicek, Peter Pons, Tintinelli had been there. They were the leaders. And so to come train here was an honor. I had never been to Colorado. So it was really a treat. I came out here and started my life down at the trauma center. That's what got me to Colorado.
Yeah.
That's what got me in medicine here. Yeah. And then, you know, my law school career followed thereafter.
Yeah, but what made you decide that being a trauma doc wasn't enough?
Well, you know, so here's the thing. I love medicine. I love trauma. In fact, I've told, you know, our staff gets tired of hearing me say this, but, you know, if God came down tomorrow and said you can only do one thing, I'd probably do medicine. Hmm. I love it. Really, really love it. I got to testifying a lot because everything that happens bad in life usually starts or ends up in the hospital. And I was seeing this over and over and over where, you know, there'd be questions about which angle did a bullet hit someone? What was the bruising pattern here? What was the cause of death here? What was the actual injury? At what level was the spinal fracture? So there was paralysis, blah, blah, blah. When these attorneys take any cases to court, they need a doctor. They need an expert. And so I started acting as an expert. I testified over 100 times as an expert, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. To do that, you probably have to write thousands of reports because every report doesn't end up, when they ask a question, doesn't end up in testimony. but I wrote thousands of reports, ended up testifying over 100 times, and through that began to see really what I describe as a major gap between law and medicine. And it wasn't the gap I had always expected. And that prompted it all.
Hmm. So what's the gap?
Well, the gap that I always had expected was just, doctors hate attorneys.
Ah.
I didn't say many nice things about attorneys to any of the attendants the residents. I was an attending 10 years at the University Hospital, did my time at Denver General down here.
So, all right, in your ads, I've seen a few, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I can be the best lawyer for you because I understand medicine. So what's an example that you've seen where a non-medical doctor attorney would have seen it differently or missed something that you saw? A really specific example.
Oh man,
I have so many, but let's start with one.
And that is the gap that I ended up eventually discovering. When I would go testify in these cases, it began to really dawn on me that if the attorneys don't know the medicine, they can't represent the injured person fully. Not in the way that really gets a jury to understand. And I saw this time and time and time again. So here's some examples to answer your question. We had a case just not too long ago where a person, an elderly gentleman, had slipped and fell in a place where a condition shouldn't have existed. He broke his hip. They come in, they ask us to look into it. We look into it all. About 6 weeks later, he dies of a heart attack. The gentleman does. And we were dealing with him on a fractured hip. But I know from doing journal club after journal club after journal club that post-hip fracture, in the 3 months following post-hip fracture, your risk of having a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, goes up somewhere between 18 and 25%. Because you get so many inflammatory mediators traveling throughout the body that that goes everywhere, not just to the hip that was mm-hmm. fractured. So you can actually tie the hip fracture directly to the heart attack. Now think of that. Right? A medical doctor would.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my first cases that I actually did super well on is I had a person with an Achilles injury, a heel injury. And it was where the Achilles attached to the heel and there was a lot of inflammation. The person had been in a motor vehicle crash and this had started not immediately after the crash. They went to the hospital for neck and back injuries or something else, but within about a week or so, they began to have this heel pain and it became more and more inflamed, more inflamed, and pretty quick they had a tendon tear there. And I was presenting this as evidence to the people in the motor vehicle crash.
I would have thought bullshit.
Exactly what the adjuster said. Bullshit, you make stuff up, your standard attorney.
Yes.
I sent him literature that shows, 10 times your body weight transfers through your Achilles, 10 times your body weight. So if you wear 200 pounds, 2,000 pounds through the flexion of planting, the sudden, planting against the floor is a sudden inflammatory condition. I gave them the medicine on inflammatory conditions, tendinopathy, forced through that, and they paid for it. Because here's the thing, most attorneys go after money like they beat their chest like a 10,000 pound gorilla, give me the money or I will sue you. That's so wrong. If you give the insurance the information, reasonable information, without stretching the truth,
mm-hmm.
they'll look at it reasonably. If they don't, they'll end up with a bad faith claim. But you need to give them every chance to look at it reasonably. And here's what I found. They've been very reasonable to my firm.
Hmm. Because you're able to bring other things to light that maybe others wouldn't have.
Absolutely.
So has your job changed then from being, I'm going to say a lawyer or not, whatever. I mean, you've got hundreds of cases going simultaneously right now because of the size of your firm. So has your job changed now to one where you're just kind of looking at these things from a medical perspective? You don't run any cases yourself anymore, do you?
No, I do.
Do you?
Because I have a passion for it. So if you think about this, I'm on my second career, but I'm young in this career. I really got Ramos Law going in pretty significantly in about 2012. So to have a firm with, about 70 attorneys, 300 staff members assisting them, 9 offices. We're now not only in Arizona and Colorado, but also in Wyoming. It has grown tremendously. But because I'm so young into it myself, I still love it. Not too long ago, I'm sorry to say, I just lost a trial. I love it and I work on cases aggressively. One thing has changed, and that is I like to look at all complex injury cases, the MRIs, the CT scans, through my medical eyes to see how we're going to do this. I like to talk to the attorneys and explain what an injury means to someone for their future. And there were so many injuries that I began to get bogged down where I was the bottleneck.
Mm.
So what I did was I hired a couple doctors.
Huh.
that work in-house. Yeah. I have an in-house medical division. Mm-hmm. I hired a billing manager from a major medical practice in town, hired two office managers.
So that was actually a question I was going to have for you is, how can you possibly scale your medical training applied to legal cases?
Yeah.
And you've just answered it.
That's
by
how.
By hiring more doctors.
In-house, which most law firms would think, what a waste of money, what a waste of overhead. Not when you take our approach to the cases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not only necessary, it's mandatory.
Okay, got to shift gears now.
Yeah.
When you were a physician working in operating rooms, patients came to you. Mm-hmm. Most people, at least I think of physicians, it's like you think of them as service-oriented, but not marketing, aggressive marketing types. In order to grow and compete in this world that you're in, you have to be an aggressive marketer, right? So what kind of mental shift did you have to go through to do that?
Yeah, that's a huge one. I'm glad you asked that, Dave. I don't like that part of it. I don't like the marketing part.
How can you say that and have your face everywhere?
I know. I really do. It took a lot of thought.
It doesn't make any sense.
I know. It took a lot of thought and literally prayer between me and my wife to decide to do this. But why we decided to do it was people kept saying, I wish I knew about you 6 months ago. I wish I knew. My so-and-so was in a crash. My aunt, my uncle. Anyway, long story short, we dove into that arena and I quickly lost us $750,000. My wife is the first time ever in our lives together where she questioned one of my business decisions. She said, we were down $750 in a year. And she said, are you sure about this law stuff?
She said it differently than that, didn't she?
Yeah, probably more emotion.
Yeah.
So looking back, thankfully I went into it kind of blind and ignorant because I had no idea what I was getting into. I mean, at that time, and it's still today, you've seen these advertisers in town, these law firms, they're everywhere, every commercial.
Yeah.
And I jumped in and started competing and it's worked out.
Well, and I read, doing some research for this, again, listeners, like massively curious, that firms like yours can spend 15 to 20% of revenue on marketing. That's like more than, like Nike does single digits. Like, what the hell?
Easy that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. 20% is absolutely an easy amount, a million or millions per month.
You know what? It's massive. Like, you got to have some cojones to compete. And I even read things like, listeners, if you know about like search engine optimization and pay-per-click and stuff, that you could pay as much as like $400 for a click.
For a single click. That doesn't
for
even
a single
come,
click.
Doesn't even come to your firm.
Yes.
Yes.
That's
100% accurate.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah. Like I say, I'm glad I didn't know what I was getting into.
Who would have the courage to do that?
And once you start getting some successes, I've always been someone who I don't mind. To me, success is a journey. And I don't mind.
It's an expensive journey.
I don't mind investing in that journey. Yeah.
Wow.
So we do that heavily.
That's incredible.
And it's been fun.
So, all right, let's talk about the stats, though.
Okay.
What percentage of clicks become clients?
Oh, gosh, probably 1% to 3%.
That would mean basically 400,000, $40,000 of paid click and paid search for a client.
Using that example, yes, and which is why I don't do that. Yeah, I started out that way, and probably part of my $750,000 in losses that we talked about. Now I'd have to look back to tell you what percentage of it was that. I thought this pay-per-click thing was the thing. Here's what it is for businesses like this. It's like crack cocaine because, you're paying the people who are clicking, and you're seeing the clicks, and you're seeing how many people it takes through your website. But then what's an actual case that converts by the time they do that? And it's very, very, very low. But it gets you, and then here's what happens. The minute you turn it off, crickets. No calls.
Yep.
So I am not involved in that type of advertising, rarely ever. If I have some particular I'm targeting, maybe briefly, but it's very brief with a set budget that turns it off at a certain point
because
it's just not wise advertising.
Well, it was interesting. Well, I searched for Ramos Law and you weren't first.
Yeah.
One of the even bigger name firms came up first. I'm like, wow, if I click, what is that going to cost this guy? And pretty interesting. Okay, so more ratios then. So of all the people who contact you, what percentage of those become clients?
Well, that answer has changed. Oh, what percent become clients?
Yes.
Okay, so I just had this last month's conversion rate from calls. We have different ways.
Incoming calls.
About 54% of the clients that the initial impression is that they pass a first screen. Mm-hmm. About 54% of those will become a client. But that first screen, to give you an example, the phone here rings 168 times an hour. I have my own call center.
168 times an hour.
168 times an hour. I have my own call center.
That is astounding.
Yes. And 70, I think now 72 people on phones. But of all of those people that call in, we probably take 1% to 3%.
Okay. I want to ask you some questions first, but I'm looking across the studio here at Danny.
Yes.
Like, does that number freak you out? It's not. I'm like, holy cow, that volume is freaking nuts.
Crazy.
Okay, so let's talk some more about the volume. Everybody, I'm guessing that a lot of people, I'm getting agitated here because this is what I really want to get into. I'm guessing that most of those people who call just want like somebody to write them a big check for not much of anything.
There's a lot of them, yes.
Yeah. So what questions do you ask? Give me a few examples of questions you ask that uncover the real stuff from the, I want Ramos to get me a bunch of money.
Yeah, it's so much easier than you think. It's not very scientific early on to determine. First of all, you know, we look to see who was at fault in the crash and what their injuries are. And if a person says, I got rear-ended, and you say, okay, so we know that the person's
at fault. That's a good
start. Okay, yep. Liability is probably going to end up being clear. And we asked them about injuries and said, well, I'm not really injured, but I saw these commercials on TV that I can get a lot of money. You know, I know what? We're not the law firm for you. The call pretty much ends there gently. We're not the law firm for you. We take care of injured people. And injuries are important to us because it's our ethics and our integrity on the line because recoveries are paid for injuries, not for pretty pictures, not because you were hit. It's not, you know, there was this attorney ran this commercial, get in a wreck, get a check.
Yeah, that's
this
right.
is not that firm.
Yeah, yeah.
At all.
But what about that stuff that you were talking about earlier that's like weird? They're like, no, I don't really, nothing really hurts. My toe hurts or whatever. Like, how do you discern between those?
Oh, real injuries are clear. The person where she had the Achilles stuff, the only reason that became a challenging medical issue is because the Achilles stuff came out after a couple weeks of the tendinopathy developing. But she had neck and back pain. She had a totaled car, was towed from the scene of the crash. She went to the hospital by ambulance. There's somebody with a high potential of injuries, you know, pretty substantial injuries. And you can just tell there are people who will tell you frankly right off the bat, I'm not really that injured. There are people that will tell you, you know, my neck hurts, but I've had prior neck injuries and it's about like it has been. Mm-hmm. You know, they get this interpretation that, you know, again, getting a wreck equals a check and it doesn't. It's a real quick way to lose credibility as a law firm, in my opinion.
Do you need credibility in your line of work?
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, I'm glad you asked that because I'm out to change. You know, lawyers are the brunt of many jokes and deservedly so. They'll sue on anything. They'll do anything. They'll take anything. That's the idea out there. And I think there's probably some truth to that. I think because law schools pump out more law students than there are possibly jobs for. And they start to take anything to be a lawyer. And then they're taught to, you know, zealously advocate for clients. So what they do is, in my opinion, they take on things that bring their own credibility at issue.
Don't you think that if I were talking to any of your competitors in the same way, that they would say the same thing?
Probably. They probably would. The difference is that between them and between us is if you talk to the competitors and you ask them, do you selectively screen? Do you, you know, whatever? What do you screen? And if they talk anything medicine, they're probably making up about half of it. Mm.
Okay, so when you're saying that too, and I respect everything you're saying, I find it quite interesting. But I mean, aren't they all screening in some way for profitability?
Well,
before you answer that, okay, think about it for a second because I forgot to thank my sponsor. Please. I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast since 2021. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is a podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Dr. Joseph Ramos of the Ramos Law Firm. I want to take a moment to thank my great friends at Via Technologies. They host ProCo 360. They're great help. I appreciate all the help your team gives me to manage our website. Also, they are building a great and growing client-focused business. They work with some really smart clients who hire them to collaborate on strategy and technology to help them grow their businesses using web-based tech and digital marketing. So wanted to take a moment again to thank my friends at Via Technologies and then get back to Joe, because I asked you a question about screening for profitability. And honestly, that's what it seems like to me. Now, hearing what you've said, maybe I feel differently, but still, it seems like a law firm like yours screens for, are these cases that we can win and earn profit?
Yeah. So you're right, but this will take a little bit of explanation. Any company or any business owner who told you that they didn't screen or look at profitability before they did anything, I don't care if it's a printing company or whatever, they're lying if they say they don't look at that.
You know, that's
so
fair.
So that applies across the board. Myself and any other law firm out there is looking at it. Here's the difference. When you can tell this by the ads, when a law firm advertises how much they get people, I got billions recovered. I got this settlement.
So-and-so got me $400,000, blah, blah, blah.
What they want is any client that they can get a margin on. And that's their idea of profitability. This is an $8,000 case. I can get it done for six. Sign it up. I'm not here to, sometimes you work smarter, not harder. And sometimes volume doesn't equal the same ultimate outcome financially. And we get a tremendous amount of volume of calls. But as you could tell from earlier in our interview, the screen I have set up, the filter, has very, very fine pores at the end of it about what gets through. I want to help a lot of people. But I can refer people. There are law firms out there right now that survive almost single-handedly based on my referrals to them of what we don't take. I want to, medicine is complex. Law can be complex. And that's where I want to work. That's where I want our focus. So our attorneys do some really incredible things. And just to tell you that that's not lip service, our Colorado Trial Lawyers Association, every year there's these awards you can buy and these stamps you can put on your thing through all these outside companies. Colorado Trial Lawyers is peers elect the best attorneys in Colorado for five different awards. Two of the last 3 years, this firm has gotten those awards. That's from our peers from doing real law. Right? We just came from the CTLA convention this year. They invite speakers up to this thing that they think are the finest attorneys in Colorado. Our law firm had a speaker in that last year and this year. Actually, we had two. This year, we had one. So our peers are recognizing, we do the real deal. And I think part of that is not putting out there, hey, if there's a possibility to get profitability here, come to us. Good for them. Good for their business model. Mm-hmm. Not good for me.
So you must, especially, I'm going to use this term because you're a medical guy, triage, your clients. And, I'm guessing that some are high volume transactions, like this is going to be a quick settle. We can help them. Let's do it. Others, are going to be very complex, very expensive, and very time consuming. How do you think about those?
Well, the first thing is just transparency with the clients. From a business perspective, it's easy for me because unlike many law firms, I don't run a line of credit to run advertising or to pay anybody. I pay for most of my advertising cash up front. Took me a while to get going that way, but you get better deals and it takes off a lot of stress. I can sleep every night. When it gets to, so now if the business end of it's covered, it gets to the client aspect. And the client aspect is transparency right up front. Because sometimes, law moves slow. And if I think to litigate and get to the end of a case successfully is going to take us 18 months, 20 months, a client may have been expecting 3 or 4 from TV commercials they've seen, right? They just need to know up front. If they want to push a different direction, we honor the client. But I want them to know before we do what their options are. What I think the risks are, what I think the benefits are, why I would do one versus the other if it was my family. And I think by doing that, you form a really loyal client-based group. And it's probably why now here at Ramos Law, probably 30% of all of our referrals maybe even a touch more, it varies from month to month, are from past clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that is great. That's saving me money. There's another business
and
perspective.
Sure, it's an easy sales cycle and the whole bit.
Yeah.
But now, it's argued, or maybe the perception is true, that having a contingency fee model aligns you with your client.
Mm-hmm.
You only win when they win. That's true of your firm too, right?
That's
absolutely
true.
You get a contingency fee.
Yep.
And I don't know, what are they, 35, 40% or something like that?
Yep, varies. If it settles versus if it litigates, anywhere from 35 to 45%, we have a four-tiered fee system.
Mm-hmm.
That depends on how far in the case we get, what we get paid.
I see. And so when you do that, one could always say that your needs are aligned. Like I have a financial planner, they get 1%, and you know, if I grow, they grow, blah, 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 that kind of stuff, right? But in your case, couldn't you be more interested in settling than the client? You know, I mean, how do you make sure that you stay aligned in that way?
Well, there's a really strong business principle here that's even outside of ethics. First of all, I'll start with ethics and character because it's the most important thing to me. And I have integrity and I have a sense of responsibility. And I can't look a person in the eyes and tell them, yeah, you should take this $90,000 when I really think it's worth $100,000. I can't do that. But assuming you didn't even believe that, think of this. Whatever an insurance company, because they are big data gathering businesses. If they understand that my firm will take $10,000 less than a case is worth, if the policy limits are $100,000 and I'll take $90,000, they just gather data on me. What do you think they do over the years? That's what I get from then on downstream. So it makes it easy for me from a business perspective because it's not that case. It's not that fee. It's my business. It's the next 1,000 cases I damage if I settle for $1 less. Imagine this. If you do just 100 cases and you settle every one of them for $10,000 less than they are, that's $3,500 per case in attorney's fees less. Multiply that times 100 cases. 100 cases is nothing for this firm. That's nothing. Imagine what my business losses would be at the end of the year by allowing them to have me take anything less than fair. So I just don't do it. I don't do it because it's why I've been able to grow. We do it right. I've taken the longer, slower road.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God it's been fast, I think, compared to most businesses' growth.
Yeah.
But it's paid off.
How many clients do you have at a given time?
Oh, man. Thousands.
Because
Well, yeah. I mean, I have 9 offices in 3 states.
Thousands of clients simultaneously.
Yes.
So then, as you were, all of the values you were just sharing with me about how you think about cases and stuff, you've got how many attorneys?
About 70, I think 72 now.
So they probably have varying values based on, you know, their kids going to college or someone is sick or this and that. I mean, how do you manage how they perceive these things?
Well, this is good, man. This is really good. I like this.
I'm high-fiving a personal injury attorney. What the hell?
So one of the things that I do is this. First of all, one of the reasons that I pay for all my advertising, all my expenses, and I have all this stuff, you know, paid for up front, and I took that route was because I'm not financially pinched like a lot of people. Now, I don't want that attorney to be financially pinched either, right? Attorneys that work for pure contingency in a law firm, you have to worry about what their motivations are.
Yeah.
What is their school bill, their private school bill for their kids? What is their car payment? I don't have a single attorney that works for contingency only. I pay salary plus an amount. And the reason is I want every one of them not to have to worry about their next month, their house payment, their car payment, whatever. If they settle zero, they make zero money. I get the list every month. Usually there's 10 to 12 of them that brought in $0, sometimes more, $0. It's okay. It all balances out over the long term. If you have good people practicing good law who care about people, you will do well. So they have their salaries that take care of them. When they're doing well on cases, they do really well. And I think that's how you do it. I think if you put your attorneys, I don't care how successful you are, if you put your attorneys on a pure contingency basis, now it may not be just my values that's depending
and
on
the case. And a lot of law firms do that, right?
They do.
So is your base enough that people can pay their bills?
Oh, well enough. Every one of them over 6 figures for a base.
As a base.
As a base, yeah.
Well,
and it ranges in experience and trial position, but not one under 6 figures. Not one. And you know, so they absolutely all have their lives covered. And then they can just go up from there.
That's cool. All right. Let's talk about what I told you I wanted to talk about before we get started, and certainly before we wrap up. And that's this whole reputation of of plaintiff's attorneys.
Yes.
That it's a racket, all the things that you've heard. Like, okay, what do you think?
Yeah. I was worried. I'll tell you how worried I was about that. When I used to go to dinner parties early on, and people would say, hey, what do you do? You
know, I was going to ask you that exact question. What do you say at parties?
I used to say, you know, I'm a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I would run from the attorney thing because attorneys have, in many cases, a well-deserved bad reputation. But here's what I've realized over time. I was asked recently by someone, do you think you felt more people in law or in medicine? And I think I felt more people in law. So now I don't run from it. And here's why. I am on a mission to change that exact perception of personal injury attorneys. Nobody likes them until you need them.
Well, for sure.
Until you start getting harassed by a company, an insurance company who's not going to pay you, questioned that your condition was pre-existing, you didn't have the right gap insurance or the right bodily injury coverage or uninsured motors, until you find yourself in a hole and you go, what do I do? Let me go to somebody who does this every day. Are you thankful, right? So my goal is to educate the public and to do right by people. You know, my firm, something we do that very few firms do, I never take more than the clients. There are some firms where, you know, the attorneys make more than the clients, believe it or not, because the medical bills get paid out of the client's settlement. So if you get a $100,000 settlement and the attorney's fees are $35,000 and the person has $60,000 in medical bills, what's left over for them? $5,000. I can't do that to people. So
what do you do?
So statutorily, we're allowed to our attorney's fee. So we take a $35,000 attorney's fee. There's five left over for the client and we split our attorney's fee with them.
Really?
Yeah, so we don't get a dollar more than they do.
Is that legal?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, you're a lawyer and you just told me that.
Absolutely. Attorney can base their fee on what they feel is fair for the work they've done. So while the client has signed a deal with me that it's allowed me to maybe exceed them by $30,000, mm-hmm. I'm not going to hold their feet to the fire on settlement day on that. That's just, again, looking people in the eyes.
Right, for
no,
sure.
How could you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the kind of things I think over time that are changing this perception of personal injury attorneys. If more personal injury attorneys would do that, this perception would change. Yeah. And more personal injury attorneys would tell clients, no, sorry, you should not be suing somebody for that case, perception would change.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to start.
Yeah. Huh. All right. My belief is that we all pay for large settlements. That, sure, the insurance company might pay today, but they're always going to get their money back. They're just going to raise premiums. And so if you get crazy big settlements for your clients, I'm going to pay for that.
Massive misconception.
Explain that then.
So, and this goes all the way back, and you can look this up. Go back and look at like when we had personal injury protection back in 2001. We had PIP in Colorado. They paid a mandatory $100,000 of medical in any case, plus did an attorney's fee settlement. The promise at that time by the insurance lobby to our state legislators were, if we could just get rid of this $100,000 that we have to pay for this care, insurance rates would go down. They've not. They've gone up every year. Now, you might say then to that, well, that's because of these settlements or these lawsuits. Not at all. How does State Farm, when we see all these wildfires burning, who's paying for all those houses? State Farm, Allstate, Farmers.
Well, I will eventually.
Exactly. When there's a hurricane, when there's a flood, when there's anything. So what they do every year is they lump all of this into what their ultimate profit's going to be. So many people perceive that what we do, because we've sued someone who has an injury to get them back a recovery to help them in the future, as the cause of these rising rates. The truth is, until there's no fires, no wind damage, no hail damage, no you name it, right? These rates are going to keep going up. And guess what? Even then they might. I've never seen them turn around and say, you know, this year we only paid $100 million in car crash claims. So we're lowering rates 3%.
No, but I did get a rebate check for my insurance company recently.
You
it wasn't
did.
Big.
You did. I need that insurance company.
I did. But all right. So why is it that the perception, and I think maybe you've answered some of that already, Joe, the idea that all these ads are saying, you know, somebody got me this, somebody got me that. But the idea that these larger payouts, or maybe any of the payouts, are kind of bullshit, that they're just inflated by firms like yours to get people money, and that it's just bullshit.
Yeah. So there's a couple things on that that you have to realize. The first is, and this doesn't answer your question, but I think the public needs to know this. Most massive payouts or massive verdicts get advertised never get paid out. The reason is we have caps in the state. So we've literally done trials where you walk in, the jury gives you a $5 million verdict. They leave the room. They think they took care of this person because of the evidence you presented. And then the judge reforms the judgment back to all the caps. So, and for example, in our state, medical malpractice is one example. Up until about a year ago, if you died, your life was worth $500,000. $500,000. I could go sue for your family once you're dead, get a $10, $12, $14 million verdict to replace your income for them to take care of them, to replace their loss of a dad, of a, you know, a husband, so on and so forth, whatever they place that value on. I could sue for that. The minute that the jury gives us that value, think they've taken care of you, they leave the room, to reform back to the caps. Now, those caps are now going up over the next 5 years to be like about $1.5 million. But if you think about it, if I lost my wife, $1.5 million? Really? If a jury heard my story and heard about me and my wife, and they felt like, you know, maybe the income she contributed, or what she did, how she was in my life, our kids' lives, all just everything, was worth $5 million. Why is it worth $1.5 million? And that's not even now. That's going to take 3 more years, 4 more years to get there. Right now, her life would be worth, I don't know, $500,000, $600,000. Mm-hmm. So, point being, first of all, first point is most large verdicts never get paid out. You get them on paper. You mm-hmm, look good. Mm-hmm, check mm-hmm. in the mail. Much smaller. The McDonald's coffee case?
Yeah.
You know, everybody talks about, put coffee in yourself. Get money. Do you know how much she got?
No.
Well, rumor is $3.5 million. Look it up in the
I heard the verdict was $10
million. It was $3.5 million.
All right.
I think they settled that case. They finally settled, I think, for $280,000.
That's how much she got.
Yeah.
So
for skin grafts to her vagina.
Yeah, I heard that it was actually pretty bad.
Horrific.
When I did looking into it, how could this woman get so much money? And it turned out it was really bad.
Really bad.
So, but but then all these ads that say, so-and-so got me this much money, those are probably the amounts of the verdicts, but not necessarily the payouts.
That's exactly right. Huh. When you see there's some law firms that are putting out these maps with pins with $2 million, $7
million,
$12 million.
Those are verdict sizes.
There's guys like me on this that I don't advertise that way. Just mm-hmm. shaking my head, mm-hmm. going, man, so misleading. Yeah. So misleading.
Wow.
And that's why people start to think, hey, I got in a wreck, I can get a check.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not true. Yeah. It's just not true.
All right. Interesting. So you've already, I'm going to ask you one and then we're going to switch gears for our final kind of wrap up part. Oh, we're almost way over, but that's okay. So if you could change, do you change the industry? Would you put your thumb on the scale to make your competitors behave differently?
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. Anything that misleads people isn't right. And it creates a lot more work, you know, because I have to realign people who think that I'm not fighting for them because I'm not promising them millions of dollars. And the other thing is that, you know, I have to live in their shadow and the image they create. And I just don't see anything good about that. So in my opinion, attorneys, should they be able to advertise? Yes, like any business. How it got to this crazy stuff about, you know, telling people or promising them the value of their cases and showing people these checks and how much money, I'm just not into that. It's not fair to those of us in the industry who don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's not fair to the people who are seeing it and responding to it. Hmm. It's like advertising that, you know, a fast food hamburger is all natural.
Fair enough. All right. As we wind down, yeah. When I drove and I did a little research, I saw that your partners with the Broncos, the Mammoth, Rapids, Rockies. I saw your tailgating vehicle in your parking lot, looks pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you.
So talk about that and that sort of how that plays into your whole business and into your whole way of thinking about the community.
Yeah. So what I realized is that Colorado is a sports state. I came from Nevada. It was where I grew up at. We had no professional football team when I was there. The Raiders were much later. And so when I came to Colorado and I got into this sports culture, I mean, there are 20-year waiting lists for Broncos tickets, right? So there is a massive audience with sports teams. But here's what's really important. Sports athletes, they have all these people that look up to them, that are followers of them, that, you know, they put them on a pedestal. And what I begin to realize is that if you want to make a difference in people's lives, which is my goal, and we're part of a lot of charity, a lot of stuff in Colorado to prove that, you want to make a difference in people's lives, get to the people that they're going to look up to. Get to the people who have the eyes. So it fits for me in two ways. Number one, it's a great advertising platform because we're a sports state. But number two, all these eyes for most people. Now, maybe when we get to be 50s or 60s, we don't quite idolize these athletes like many. But I'll tell you, you'd be surprised up until that age, how many people will, you know, if Garrett Bowles is over in my suite at the game, you'd be surprised how many people will stop by, want pictures, they want this, that, all this stuff. You know, they idolize them. If you connect with good people and with good values with these athletes, they've got a platform. Now you want to talk about impact. That's not just advertising impact, that's personal impact. And that's why I align with the sports teams and the sports players.
That's cool. What else should we talk about before we wrap up as far as like where you're heading, what you're doing with Ramos?
You know, where are we headed with Ramos? That's a great question. Here's one thing I would wrap up with. Anybody who ever thinks about Ramos, the law firm, or even any personal injury attorney, let's just do this for all personal injury attorneys. Before you form your judgments of them, find out who you're dealing with. Look into them. Learn about them a little bit. What do they do? You don't believe how many people I've had come to our law firm that say, you know, I can't believe you actually support you know, Dare to Share or CU Young Life, or I saw you support the Broomfield High School team, or I saw you with Pomona Wrestling. Like, why do you do? They learn that we actually believe in charity, you know, Halloween candy for all these kids up in Northland, $10,000 worth of Halloween candy for them. You know, it's not how much you can put in, necessarily a dollar amount with any of that, but what are you really doing? You can tell a person by where they put their time and where they put their treasure. And I think that for personal injury attorneys, it gets back to that, you know, that image. It's one thing I don't like. It's one thing I try to build and repair every day. And I wish every single person that at least looked into my law firm looked into that. Because behind everything, you can tell a person by, again, where they put their time and their treasure. That would be my message.
All right. I think that's a good note to end on, shall we?
Sweet. Well, it's been fun.
All right. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Dr. Joseph Ramos of the Ramos Law Firm. Joe, fun conversation.
Awesome.
And that was so fun to actually, you know, have a moment of high five with somebody. Like, your industry has fascinated me forever, and I'm glad we got to talk in depth about it.
Hey, thanks. I enjoyed the time.
Good. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in the app. That's it. Live, work, love Colorado.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that was a fun conversation.
That was awesome.
And you let me dig into everything I wanted to. I appreciate all the questions. I love them. You had great questions.